This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're now entering Place to Be Nation Sports Lounge. And now, here are your hosts, Roger Morissette, Chad Campbell, Andrew Flanagan, Jeff Machado, and Keith Schmidt.
Come on, girl. Yeah. It's me, Jackie Murray. Give me that look. That's right. Let's get sweaty. Let's get real sweaty. I'm talking rainforest sweaty. I'm talking swamp sweaty. Let's fill a bathtub full of sweat. All right.
Daddy, who wants to love me sexy?
Hello, folks. Welcome to the Sports Lounge. I'm your host, the Cowboy. 2 weeks in a row here. Sports Lounge is going strong. Got a lot of positive feedback on the last week's episode where me and Mr. Rosero had a little back and forth about Deflategate, kept things, you know, I felt, considering our allegiances, kept things pretty even-handed and, you know, both made compelling arguments one way or the other, and It was good. So we were without our regulars last week, which is why JT jumped in. The regulars are back. The lounge is hopping. I'm joined by the two stalwarts of the lounge. The baseball guy, the animal, Keith Schmidt. What's going on, Keith?
Not much, Cowboy. I'm ready to talk. Ready to do this.
All right. And fresh off his trip from Disney World, hopefully, we did tell you to follow him on Twitter last week, because when this guy's on vacation and a big Boston sports news hits, he's got nothing to do but to tweet about it. So real entertaining stuff on at Bogle Hill, of course, the one, the only, Cowboy Senior. How was the trip, Cowboy Senior?
The trip was great. I was a little fired up about some of the things going on with my hometown football team, the Patriots, and that kind of came out on Twitter. But besides that, I just enjoyed the 92-degree weather and the family fun and everything. It was a great trip. But the other side of me was a little bit pissed off, and still is. I'm still a little ornery about my football team. Other than that, I'm really good.
So, Senior, I'm lucky enough to be friends with Senior on Facebook, and a lot of pictures from Disney, a lot of good pictures. There was one constant in the pictures, whether he was posing with Stitch, with Mickey Mouse, Buzz Lightyear, whether he was at the Polynesian, the Grand Floridian, Epcot Center. Every single picture I saw, Senior had a Patriots shirt on. Is that a coincidence, Senior, or did you wear a Patriots shirt every day?
Totally on purpose, because the decision came down as I was leaving, and I said, it's going to be Patriots. And also, if you would have gotten a back view of me for every possible time I could, I mean, I couldn't ask my wife to do laundry too many times at Disney World, but every time I could, I had that number 12 on my back. That guy has totally earned every bit of my support as a Patriot fan, and I wanted to let... Basically, I knew I was going to be seeing people from all over the country, all over the world, and I wanted to know that I was squarely behind our guy, that he's earned my support, he's got it, I believe every word he said, and I'll back him right to the end.
So Senior's a little old school there, huh, Keith? Said
I like it.
No, he said, I'll wear the Brady shirt as long as my wife washes it.
Hey, general. Hey.
Didn't think about going to do that laundry yourself, huh, Senior?
There you go.
I like your style, man. I like it.
It's a different time.
Yeah. I'm taking the Teddy Bruschi approach. I was also really proud of Teddy Bruschi just wasting Damian Woody on the NFL Network and saying the fact that he doesn't believe every single word Tom says, just completely disrespecting Tom. And Teddy was really, really fired up, and he's real sincere, you can tell. Oh, and that guy just bleeds Patriot red and blue, and I love Teddy Bruschi. But I always loved him, and I love him even more now.
You know, blind faith, That's what we're about here on the Sports Lounge. Blind faith in number 12. So we are going to discuss Deflategate Senior.
Okay.
We did a whole episode on it for the most part last week. But yeah, we didn't have like I said, it was even handed and right down the middle, and I expect that this won't be. So
I don't think it's a real down the middle issue. You know, I think you guys being even handed and down the middle were the exception to the rule. I think people around the country are strongly lining up either on one side or the other, and basically it's us. It's the New England area against the world. It's us against the world. We're going to, and I see the Pats carrying that mentality into next season, the mentality they've used before, and I wouldn't want to get in their way. When Tom gets on that field, I wouldn't want to get in his way. They're going to use this big time.
Oh yeah, no, I agree that it's a high, definitely going to motivate them. I think it helped them out in the Super Bowl. The motivation from this. Now, whether they'll be able to cover anybody with their cornerbacks is another story. But we have football previews for that to talk the X's and O's. So Keith's here.
One little tidbit about that: if that suspension is upheld, Brady's first game back will be against Indianapolis, the Whistleblowers. So.
Poor Indianapolis
that
can't
win. That
should be interesting. I mean, the Pats really have their number, and of course it would work out that way for Indianapolis.
Yeah.
It's a tough draw for the Colts right there.
Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. We that has really dominated the sports world here, but there's a lot of other good stuff going on.
Yes.
Keith, can you believe we're already a quarter of the way through the baseball season?
I can't believe how fast it's going by. Quarter of the way through. And the Astros are still in first place.
Man.
How about that?
Home runs, baby. Home runs.
Home runs and strikeouts. And walks.
That's what they do. Dallas Keuchel. Dallas Keuchel again today. 7 innings of shutout ball. Picks up the W. It's a good segue. So what we wanted to do here tonight for the faithful was give our quarter of the season baseball awards. So do MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, and any other awards you can think of. So let's get to it. What do you say?
Yeah, let's do it.
So Keith, we'll start with you being the baseball expert. We start in the American League. Who's your American League most valuable player so far, and why?
Well, the AL is a little tougher than the NL. But if you go strictly by the numbers, I'd have to give it to Nelson Cruz right now. 347 average, 16 homers, 33 RBI. If not for Nelson Cruz, that team would be 15 games out of first place instead of 8. When he signed, everybody said his power numbers would drop. He's making Safeco look small. He's basically carrying the Seattle offense, which is keeping them somewhat in the hunt. But yeah, right about now, he's my MVP.
Yeah, and you know, on our previews, we talked about Nelly Cruz. And we felt that it wouldn't negatively impact him, the move to Seattle, because he hits long home runs.
Yes, he does.
There's really, when he catches one, there's no ballpark that's going to hold it. Now, a guy like Cano was hitting a lot of home runs, you know, a lot of cheapies in Yankee Stadium, right? And not the case with Cruz. I think that's it's a good solid choice, Keith. Senior, where do you fall here?
Yeah, I mean, I already jotted these things all down, so I'm not going to deviate just to be different. You kind of like to go with a guy from a team that's winning, but Cruz's numbers are just too good. I mean, Andre Dawson won an MVP for a last place team once when he was with the Cubs, and no matter what Seattle's doing, you look at Cruz's numbers and you factor in that he's not hitting in a hitter's park. He's 1 point behind in He's 347, is 1 point behind Prince Fielder, who's leading the league at 348, and besides that, he's winning the Triple Crown. I mean, that's just awesome. The guy's always been a real good hitter. He seemed to take a step up last year, and now, I mean, this year, he's just off the charts, and especially, like we say, considering he's doing it in Seattle, too, going, you know, Texas, Baltimore, he played in hitter's paradises before this, and now his home park is really a pitcher's park, and he's hitting better than ever, so... Yeah, I think you've got to go. You have to go with Nelly Cruz. My runner-up would have been, and it's, you know, this team is winning. They don't have the best record in the league. It's not the Astros, but my runner-up would have been Miguel Cabrera, because he's just the force again. You kind of don't notice him. You kind of oh, and then you look and he's 331, 10 home runs. 30 RBIs, you know, he's just a machine. He does it so well year in, year out. We might be sitting here watching a guy that's going to go down top three or four right-handed hitters of all time. 32 years old, he hit his 400th home run already. I mean, the guy is just a machine, and he's doing it again this year. So he would have been my close runner-up to Cruz. But Cruz's numbers are just staggering, and I think you have to give it to him.
Yeah, I think we're going to sweep it, guys. That's also who I picked, Nelly Cruz, and I would also put Cabrera second for all the reasons you said. With that said, I don't think that by the end of the year we'll feel the same way. Cruz, the batting average can't stay there, right?
That would be shocking. Yeah.
It's probably going to drop 100 points, right, Keith? I mean, given his just, I mean, at least. I mean, 280 is a great season for him, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's where I see him leveling off. But I think he can maintain those power numbers, though, the home runs. I mean, he's definitely on a pace to hit 40 plus. So I think he can maintain that. You know, once he starts hitting these East Coast places when the weather warms up, and yeah, he's going to hit some more home runs.
All right. Stay with you, Keith. A.L. Cy Young.
A.L. Cy Young. I think you watched him pitch today, if you were watching. Dallas Keuchel. Unbelievable the year this guy's having. 6-0, which wins really don't matter, but he is 6-0. A 1.67 ERA, that leads the league. He's gone. 7-8 innings every game, 46 strikeouts, batters hitting 186 against him. His whip is under 1. I mean, he's the real deal. He's one of the main reasons why Houston is where they are right now. And I mean, can he hold on to it? There's a lot of good pitchers in the league here. You know, you got Sonny Gray, who's real close, Felix Hernandez, but right now I gotta give the edge to Keuchel. He leads in most of the important categories.
And the team's winning.
Yes.
Which, if it's close, if you go with the winning team.
Right? Correct.
So, Senior, you got any difference there? Or are we going
to... I'm going to read off my notes again. Dallas Keuchel, after today, 6-0, 1.67, 0.97 whip, 46 Ks. And kind of like what I said about Cruz, I'm very impressive doing it in the park he's in. I mean, that park is just a launching pad that Keuchel pitches in. That left field is the easiest home run in Major League Baseball, and the guy's unhittable. I mean, he's been tremendous, absolutely tremendous.
And he's a lefty, which makes it more impressive.
There's also a trend going on in pitching where young pitchers, I mean, you started looking for your Cy Young Award winners. I mean, I just did it. Today. Okay, who am I going to say my Cy Young Award winners? I'm looking at a lot of young guys. Like I jotted down a runner-up in the American League, and it was the same guy Keith just said, Sonny Gray, another youngster who's just outstanding again. You know, he's just so good. So young pitchers are really guys are maturing early, and it's nice to see. And but Keuchel putting up those numbers in that park is absolutely off the charts. And he is the biggest reason that team's in first place. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's just amazing. It's been lights out so far. In a tough place to be lights out. Again, can he sustain it? Well, it remains to be seen. But at this point of the season, I think if there was a vote, you'd be unanimous among the writers. You know, I mean, how can you possibly vote for anybody else with the season he's had and the fact that the team has the best record in the American League? So, yeah, I think that's a slam dunk.
Yep. I'm going to agree, guys. So, they were kind of easy, those two, right?
Yeah,
pretty much.
So the one guy I'd like to mention that clearly wouldn't win it now, but maybe on his way, is Kluber. He started out pretty rough, but his last two starts, I mean, he's looked ridiculously good. The 18 strikeout. I mean, he could have broken the record. He had the 18 strikeouts after eight. They pulled him, and then he struck out like the first five guys in the next game. So,
yep.
It's, I mean, he had 20-21 in nine innings. So I think he's turning it on, and he could repeat. Felix Hernandez too.
If you ask me to bet who it's going to be when the season ends, that's who I'd put my money on. I mean, his numbers are totally outstanding, and again, it's kind of like what we said about Cabrera. You know? With King Felix, you hardly notice because you just expect it. You know, it's just what he does. You know.
And don't forget Clay Buchholz.
Well, wait till we get to Rookie of the Year.
We're there, Keith.
We're there?
We're there.
My man Graveman, man, he's coming back up. He's coming. No, but he really is coming. He's been pitching pretty well in AAA, so you might see him with Pomerantz on the DL back in the rotation for the A's, but I'm not predicting him to win the award. But since we are the AL Rookie of the Year, you know, there aren't many impressive rookies in the American League so far. One that sticks out to me is Devin Travis of the Blue Jays, and he really calmed down the last 2 weeks, but he's still having a really good season, especially for a rookie, batting 270, 7 homers, 26 RBI. If I had to forecast for the rest of the season, I think it may be a pitcher coming out of the American League Rookie of the Year, mainly Carlos Rodon, or one of the guys from the Blue Jays that overtake Devin Travis. But right now, Travis is my American League Rookie of the Year up to this point.
Yeah, it's tough in the American League. You're right, Keith. There's definitely more in the National League. Senior, where'd you fall?
More impact,
yeah. I had Travis, too, just because it's kind of by default. You know, he's really, I mean, I shouldn't say it's by default because he is putting up really good numbers. I mean, 271, 7 and 26 for a second baseman, you know, a rookie second baseman, and he's playing a good second base. I mean, he's clearly there now. If you ask me to forecast for the rest of the season, I agree one of those pitchers could come up, Keith, but a guy I'd keep my eye on because he has the tools. And we've seen it in flashes so far this season, but he hasn't got it consistent yet. But he's playing every day, so it's Steven Souza of Tampa Bay. The kid's got immense power. The kid's really fast. I think he's got the best tools. I think if he gets it going, he could be the guy that hits 25 to 30 home runs, and he could be a 20-20 guy. He could be a 25-25 guy this year. He's got the tools to do that, and if he would go 25-25 or 25-20, it'd be hard not to give it to him unless Travis really goes off. So far this year, definitely the quarter-year winner is Travis, but my dark horse, not me, I mean, I won't call him a dark horse. If I'm forecasting for the future, he asked me to pick the winner, I would pick Steven Souza. We'll win it before the year's over.
Yeah, I'm going Travis as well. I had Souza second, and actually, Delino DeShields Jr.
There you go. Yeah.
Based on his minor league career, he's probably not going to keep hitting like this, but he can certainly run. And So, I mean, I think they're pretty clearly 1-2-3. Mark Canna from Oakland started out the year well, but has really fallen off here recently. Devin Travis. But I'm with Senior. I think by the end of the year, at least from a hitting perspective, it's going to be Souza. Pitching, I'm with Keith on Rodon. I think Rodon's the guy, but we shall see. So a lot of agreement there in the American League. Maybe we'll mix it up a little in the National League.
Don't count out my man Kendall Graveman, baby.
Kendall Graveman, dark horse. You could probably get good odds on that right now, Keith.
You're damn right.
The ERA's got nowhere to go.
Three shutouts. His ERA would still be five.
He had a rough start to the year, you know.
Yes, he did.
But Keith, you know, you believe in the guy. That's part of being an analyst, is you're going to be wrong sometimes, you know.
That's true.
If we played all the times that we were wrong on here, you know, you and Senior would have a lot of things being played.
Well, we would have a lot of tape, huh?
I know. I'm just having a joke. I'm also wrong quite a bit.
Great segue. You ready for the National League MVP?
I am. That's probably an easy one, too.
Yeah, I think so. I'd have to say the best player in Major League Baseball right now, and that is Bryce Harper. What a season he's putting together right now. Amazing what he's doing. We just talked about him a few weeks ago, and you were asking, do you think he's a bust?
Guess not.
Boy, I guess not, man. 336, 15 homers, 38 RBI. How about 37 walks? His OBP is 474. Amazing. He's blossoming right before our eyes. And you know, he came up with Mike Trout, and obviously they were compared to each other, and it was no doubt about it, slam dunk, Trout is better. There's going to be a conversation now if he keeps playing like this. But I think, hands down, he's the MVP of the National League right now.
Yeah.
Your thoughts?
Well, so I think we got him in the middle of a hot streak. Right? I mean, clearly he can't keep this up. I mean, he's done most of the damage over the last 3 weeks. I mean, he's just gone off. He's my MVP now. Second, I had D. Gordon second. I don't think he can keep it up, but he's been fabulous.
Yeah, 400.
Yeah, he's bad. You know, he's bad. He was bad 425, you know, just a week ago. He's had a couple of offers. The guy that I think may end out being the MVP at the end of the season, who I think is you know, can be consistent, I think is really blossoming, and I think he'll be more consistent than Harper's Rizzo. He's really turned into, I mean, he's really, really fulfilling his promise. Professional hitter. I don't think the 340 average is an aberration. I think that's who he is now. Thoughts?
Yeah,
I like you.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, I had Harper, obviously. When the other thing about Harper is this team that most of, you know, I don't know, we went totally unanimous over the top on them, but we basically thought that in our preview that they were the best team in baseball, and they were off to kind of a rough start. And what he's done in the last 3 weeks really, really got them going. Just by the way, a present moment thing. Harper won't be adding to his numbers tonight because he got tossed for arguing balls and strikes in his first half.
Again?
But that other guy that came up with him just went deep, that Trout guy.
Oh, did he?
But anyway, okay. But Harper really, when the team really needed it, they weren't going good, and his explosion seemed to get them, kind of propel them, and they're playing like we thought the Nationals would play. Now they're getting the tremendous pitching, and he's leading the offense, and they're winning, and they're right where, you know, they're right knocking on the door for first place, as we expect them to be. So I think that part of what makes him so valuable is when his team really needed him, he came through and jump-started this team, caught a hot streak at the perfect time, and his numbers are incredible. And like Raj said, been done mostly in the last 3 weeks. Well, I had Cole runners up, and I guess you kind of look at power hitters more, and at least that's what I tended to do, and I didn't include D. Gordon. So that's good that we get something different here. My Cole runners up were Rizzo, the 341, the 9 home runs, 23 ribbies. And the other thing, for a first baseman, 8 steals in 10 attempts. The guy's a really good baseman. So he's just a complete player.
Him and Goldschmidt are similar guys that way.
Yeah, that's true.
They do it all.
But my other Cole runner-up with Rizzo hasn't been mentioned yet. The guy that got off to a tremendous start and really hasn't tailed off that much, Adrian Gonzalez. I mean, 355, 9 home runs, 32 RBIs. That's the numbers, and the Dodgers are winning a lot of games. I mean, that definitely puts you in the conversation, you know. So Gonzi's been terrific, and he's a proven hitter, you know, another totally proven professional hitter who, I'm not saying you don't expect that from him, but he's another guy who's done it so many times that he can be overlooked. Yeah, Adrian's hitting, no kidding, what else is new? You know, so another guy's having a great year.
You can pencil him in for close to 300, 25, and 100. You know, that's a down year for Adrian Gonzalez.
Yeah, I mean, he's on pace for a lot better than that right now.
Yeah, he's had a great quarter. That's why I had him as my co-runner-up.
Yeah, that's a good call, Steve. So where would you have ranked those guys behind Harper, Keith?
I have Rizzo 2. I guess you can't really argue with Adrian Gonzalez. And D. Gordon, I don't know. I still have a hard time believing in him, but, I mean, the numbers don't lie, right? He is hitting 400, 403 at the moment. Another honorable mention, Matt Carpenter from the St. Louis.
Really, really a solid.
Unbelievable. I mean, it jump starts that offense almost every night. I mean, he's quieted down a little bit recently, but you know, the guy's got 7 home runs. He's not a home run hitter. 24 RBI, 28 runs scored. I mean, he's the catalyst. He's the guy that makes that offense go. And another first-place team, you know.
Yeah, an amazing team. Yeah, good call there, Keith. Okay, if we gave an award, I mean, we don't give this one. This guy wouldn't be an MVP conversation, even though maybe at the end of the season he will be. But if there was an award for the most impressive home runs you're ever going to see in your life, Giancarlo Stanton has hit a few this year that are just off the charts with that nice, smooth, easy swing. I think he's hit 3 that were over 470.
Yep. Well, he hit three over 450 in the series over the weekend. Did you see the line drive he hit about 480 with the guy? The guy caught it with his bare hand out in center field.
Straight away.
So amazing how far that man can hit a baseball. And he's not this big, huge guy. He's got to be so strong to generate that bat speed. And his swing just looks so smooth. It just looks so easy.
I can't wait to see him play in Colorado. When he plays a series in Colorado with that thin air and the pitches from the Rockies, you might see a 515-footer.
He's and he could be an MVP candidate by the end of the year. They're bad though. I mean, they're not. Yeah. I mean, that's
already fired the manager. There you go. They won that
fire Redmond, and they're
a little segue there. Can we talk about that for a minute? Yeah. Putting the GM as manager, Dan Jennings. What? I've never seen that before in my life.
No experience at all.
Guy believes in himself, evidently.
I mean, if they would have taken, you know, like. They don't have a David Ross, but if David Ross was on that bench and they said, David Ross, you're our new manager, player manager kind of thing, it would be less shocking to me than them pulling a GM and putting him on the bench. He's already been exposed yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw, maybe saw the highlights. There, I believe it was the 8th inning. They've got Trumbo, Goldschmidt, and Peralta was in the lineup. He's got a lefty on the mound. He lets the lefty pitch to Trumbo and to Goldschmidt and never warms up a right-handed pitcher. So they pinch hit A.J. Pollock for the lefty, knowing that there's no righty available, and he hits a game-winning home run off. All you got to do is put a righty in the bullpen, and now the lefty's facing Peralta because, you know, it's a better matchup than Pollock against the Ray, and he just got outsmarted. And what's Arizona's manager's name? Cole. He actually said that. He said the reason I pinch hit was because I knew there was no righty warming up in the bullpen.
That's not a good look.
No, he's going to get exposed, man.
Well, especially in the National League, you know. I mean, it's a little easier to manage in the American League, right?
True. Yeah.
I mean that the lefty righty goes across both leagues, but I mean, you know, is this guy going to get confused on double switches and stuff? You know?
Yeah, no, unbelievable. But hey, you know, all the armchair managers, like, you know, I know when I watch a game, I'm sitting here second guessing the hell out of things. you know, this guy's going to prove that, you know, not just anybody can do it. I think it's going to be a tremendous failure. He might get fired before we do our half-season review. He might be gone already.
Yeah, I mean, they can't be much worse. I mean, they've been playing so bad, especially for all the, you know, they went out and spent some money.
Yeah.
And they're just not very good.
Yeah.
Oh, they definitely have talent. I mean, and it's not like their studs have it. I mean, like Gordon's hitting over 400. Stanton's been good. Ozuna hasn't been bad, but are you pitching? I mean, they're just, if they miss Jose Fernandez that much, I guess.
Well, and Henderson Alvarez, too. He went down early. He got hurt early.
He was the opening day starter, right?
And he's only pitched, what, two or three times all year, and he's throwing bat in practice, though.
Yeah, and it's his first start back. I think
he got lit up bad.
Yeah, he got shelled.
Senior's a big Henderson Alvarez guy. You like him, right, Senior?
He's a solid. I mean, look at what he did last year. Low ERA, very low ERA. He was just a solid guy. Went out there every fifth day and, you know, held the opposition down. He doesn't strike a lot of guys out, keeps the ball down. I'm a control pitcher. I do like him. I mean, you don't know. Maybe he hasn't been right all year, you know. I mean, he hasn't pitched much. He's been mainly injured, so maybe he was never right. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, if you add a good Henderson Alvarez and Jose Fernandez to their team, yeah, that makes them a lot better. You know, that would be the one and two starters. I mean, and Jose Fernandez, healthy, is a legitimate ace, you know, so. Yeah, that could change their team drastically if those two guys.
Yeah. I just worry that, especially in that division, they're going to be too far out of it
they could be buried by the time
he comes back.
So I think the last one here is probably our most interesting discussion. NL Rookie of the Year. We're going to start with you, Keith.
All righty. I'm gonna stick with my boy. I've loved this kid since he got drafted, Chris Bryant. I am so impressed with Chris Bryant. It's unbelievable. This guy looks like a six-year veteran in the batter's box. I've watched so many of his at-bats. He gets pitched literally like Miguel Cabrera. Never sees the same pitch twice. They're scared to throw him a fastball. And, you know, can't argue with his numbers. 30 games, batting .290 with a .421 OBP. 24 walks already, 4 homers, 24 RBI. I love it. I mean, I know, you know, the sexy pick might be Jock Peterson with those 10 home runs, but I like Chris Bryant a lot better.
Yeah, I picked Peterson going solely because I think Bryant's going to win it, and I think Bryant's the best rookie, the best player. Pick Peterson going solely on the fact that he's played more games. You know, I mean, I just found it tough. I found it tough to give it to a guy who missed the first couple of weeks. And Peterson's been good. I think he deserves the quarter season Rookie of the Year. By the time it's half season, it's almost certainly going to be Bryant. I really like Soler, too. And I think he could kick it up a notch as well. But, yeah, Keith. I mean, Bryant's... He's just one of those. He's just a stud, you know. He's just one of those guys who's just a stud right from the get go, you know.
Yeah.
Trout, you don't see him too often,
like
right?
A Trout, right?
Right, with yeah. The you know, he doesn't have Trout. Different player, but I mean, to your point, he was you know, I think when he came up, everybody was expecting everyone was expecting a bunch of home runs, right, because of what he did in spring training, and yep. I think what he did before he hit his first home run was even, what was he batting, about .350 or so?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, he hadn't hit any home runs, but it's shown, you know, he goes the other way. He's just a real, real professional hitter for a kid. And, yeah, by the end of the year, I mean, I think he'll probably win it in a landslide, but I gave it to Peterson for playing more.
Alfred, right now, Peterson has 10 homers, Bryant has 4. I'm willing to bet Bryant will hit more home runs than Peterson this year, even with that 6-home-run lead.
I agree with that. I think Bryant will probably hit. Bryant's going to hit 25 home runs, would be my guess, if I had to stick a number on it. And Peterson closer to 20.
I'll throw 30 out there. I think he's going to get
You got to get pretty hot for that.
Well, he definitely got the power to do it.
Yes.
Definitely has that. It's just, like I said, the part that impresses me is watching his at bats. He's not swinging. As a matter of fact, right on his own team, Madison Russell. I watch, both of those guys. And it's night and day. Night and day. And Addison Russell was a pretty highly touted prospect. And you can see Russell's going to have that normal progression of a rookie, like a Bryce Harper, where it takes him 2 years before he starts to blossom. Where Bryant is like, he just came out full bloom. He's there already. I love it.
Senior, you got anything to add there?
Oh my God, I'm going to almost carbon copy it. I definitely see Bryant as the guy that's going to win it, but again, for the first quarter of the season, I had to give it to Peterson. Just because he played more, I guess that's it. And if you look, he's in the top 10 in the National League in slugging, in OBP, in OPS, and in home runs. Pretty good for a rookie. And watching him play, he's a gazelle in center field. He's a really good
player.
He's got that nice, smooth... It conjures up memories of, a young rookie in Boston in 75, the way he's so smooth out there, lanky. He's really a nice guy, a nice kid to watch play.
Why don't you name that guy senior for the people who listen who work with
him? Oh, Freddie Lynn. Freddie Lynn, my favorite center fielder of all time. But the thing that the two of them have in common, which is incredible for guys with zero experience in such a young age, is their plate discipline. Peterson's batting .235 and his OBP is .395 because he's got 30 walks. I mean, these kids and Bryant, the same way, you watch him, he's already got 24 walks. I mean, that's incredible that they don't even have to develop that they were already there as rookies. I mean, sky's the limit for both of them, but I think Bryant is the guy with the way more natural ability. He's just going to be a super, super duper star. And yeah, I said by the end of the season, I don't think there's any stopping him from winning it, but I wouldn't mind having Jock Peterson on my team as a rookie. And for the first quarter season, I think I had to give it to him. Just again, if Bryant would have started the season up, his numbers would probably be where we'd be saying Bryant, but because the same reason you said, Raj, because he was there, and again, and the fact that he ranks in the top 10 in all these categories in the league, and he's a very good defensive player, I had to give it to him for the first quarter. End of the year, I'll go along. I'll make it unanimous that Chris Bryant's going to be the National League Rookie of the Year.
All right.
Super special player.
Can I throw one dark horse in there?
Of course.
Archie Bradley.
There you go.
That's a dark horse.
Yeah, he's impressed me.
You could pitch
definitely impressed. I mean,
I remember all the hype.
Yeah, well, I know. That was scary, man. It's amazing he didn't break anything. Just a little, I guess it was a sinus fracture, but I guess that wasn't too big a deal because he came back 10 days later. But we heard about this kid for, 2 years? Right? They were always touting him. I'm expecting this kid to come up and flame out. That's why he was never brought up. But, 2-1 with a 3.27 ERA, that's not too shabby. Pitching in that division against those lineups. I mean, that's pretty good.
Syndergaard's another guy that could emerge, too.
True. Yeah, he looked good his first couple starts.
Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, the hitters, it's probably, I think Soler's good enough that he could make it a three-horse race, but it's probably down to those two guys when you look at him.
Guerrero.
He doesn't get the at-bats.
He's starting to, though. He's starting to play a lot more third base now.
Yeah.
I think Juan Uribe's ass out of a job. What an embarrassment of riches that team has, the Dodgers. Unbelievable. They got this guy who could start for almost any team in the league, right? Guerrero. Their outfield is loaded. They got the kid that they just signed, the Cuban kid, coming in a couple weeks, Hector Oliveira. Justin Turner's starter worthy. It's unbelievable the talent that team's.
Not to mention Kershaw and Greinke at the top of the rotation, and Kenley Jansen, who's looked like the best closer in baseball since he's come back.
Yeah, and seemingly a bottomless pit of money that would make George Steinbrenner envious if he was still alive. I mean, definitely, they don't even think about spending. They just, it doesn't matter. They just put the money out there, and they got the young talent too. Yeah, it's a real loaded team, no doubt about it.
Magic knows what he's doing.
There you go.
All right, so good stuff, guys. We'll, as always, keep you in the loop about the hottest trends in Major League Baseball as the season wears on. Next episode.
I don't think we did that. We didn't do Cy Young, did we?
Hey, Cowboy.
Did we skip NL Cy Young?
NL Cy Young.
NL Cy Young.
All right. I'm going Shelby Miller.
Shelby Miller. All right.
I don't
think he's written right at the top of my list already, too.
I don't think he's going to win it. Thanks, guys. Well, you got to keep the Cowboy in check. I'm so excited to hear Senior's take on Deflategate that I negated to talk about Shelby Miller. Shelby Miller has been completely lights out. One out away from a no-hitter a couple days ago, has been untouchable. The Braves, I don't know how they freaking do it. I mean, Keith, talk about this.
They made a great trade, man. They swindled St. Louis on that one. They really did. I mean, Jason Hill was a good player. He's a nice player, but, hey, he's a free agent at the end of the year. And Shelby Miller, I mean, you know, from St. Louis's perspective, they're trading from a position of strength. And I think they panicked with the Oscar Tavares situation. When he passed, it wasn't too far after that when they made this deal for Hayward. And, you know, I think they figured Miller was expendable because they had Martinez and Gonzalez coming. So, I mean, I'd like to call it a win-win, but, I mean, right now Atlanta's reaping the benefits of that deal big time because Mark Akers is probably a better player than Jason Hayward at this moment.
Would Miller be your guy, Keith? Because there's another guy, I think, that you can go with.
I was torn between Miller and Zach Greinke, but the thing that put me over the top with Miller, and you don't see this too much anymore, he's got two complete game shutouts. I put a little stock in that. I like that. That old-fashioned, give me the ball, it's my game, leave me alone. I like that.
Greinke
would be
off the charts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Greinke's a great too, but like you said, I mean, Miller's, 1.33 ERA. Greinke is 1.52. Batting average against 1.56.
You know what? Greinke wasn't my runner-up.
Oh, no.
Some differences. My runner-up was A.J. Burnett.
A.J. Burnett. All
right. ERA, 1.15 whip, the same amount of strikeouts as Miller. His record's 3-1 because the Pirates haven't hit for him, but yeah, he's A.J. Burnett. I know it's crazy talking about A.J. Burnett and Cy Young in the same sentence, but he was my runner-up. Yeah. He's been dynamite. I mean, I don't think he can sustain it.
My runner up based on the early success of the team was Matt Harvey.
Yeah, there you go.
That's a good choice.
Can make a legitimate case for him too. Absolutely.
Yeah. Max Scherzer, he's another one that Michael Walker, yeah. Garrett Cole. I mean, there's a whole lot of guys in this.
Aaron
Harangutan. Close race.
Aaron Harangutan.
Yeah. Something tells me, though, that magic's going to wear off soon.
I know. I mean, his numbers are as good as anybody's, though. I mean, it's definitely going to wear off, right? It has
true.
To.
True, true. Hey, you know what, though? We said the same thing about Bartolo Colon for the last 3 years. So, maybe he just figured it out.
Colon got hit his last time out, too.
Yeah, Fatso's getting slammed tonight by the Cardinals. Now, here's an amazing thing, and I totally agree that was an awful trade for the Cardinals, but what an organization they have. I mean, they let go of Shelby Miller, really, a really bad trade, a pitcher who we have as the Cy Young Award winner. He could be on their team. Adam Wainwright, their ace, went down, and they have the best record in the National League.
Yep.
I mean, they're unbelievable. Amazing. They're just an amazing organization. They're getting Walker's pitching lights out, like you said, and John Lackey is pitching really, really well, too. He matched Matt Harvey to the point where the game went to extra innings and the Cardinals won. I mean, they're an amazing organization. You look at them on paper every year, and they look okay, and they're always there. I don't know how the hell they do it. I used to think it was La Russa. I don't know. I don't know how the hell they do it, but the Cardinals are always there.
They don't make mistakes. They play sound defense, timely hitting, and great pitching.
It's a good segue. They're kind of they're similar to another team that has just a consistent history of winning, you know, over the last 10 years or so. Consistent history of doing things the right way, right, Senior?
There you go. There you go.
So, see again, we touched on this a little bit in the open, but see, Senior's got – we were not going to talk more Deflategate because we've talked about it a lot. We felt like we kind of put a bow on it last week. Senior came in the lounge just fired up, fire Brady gear head to toe, finger in my face, saying he's quitting, he's done. Never coming on the lounge again if we don't talk more Deflategate, because he needs his opinions heard. So, we're ready to do battle with you, Senior. You got three Patriot fans here, and I think we're all coming from a little bit of a different place. So, with the timeline, depending on when you're listening, so you know where we're at, we are a day removed from Bob Kraft not appealing the Patriots' punishment of $1 million fine, first and a fourth round pick. It's basically said, very softly said, in my opinion, you know, while we don't agree with the punishment, the good of the 32 of the other 31 owners of the 32 teams is more important than one team. I'm not making this about one team, so we're going to take it. I think we probably all have thoughts on why that happened, because there was a closed door meeting, or him and Goodell got together at a party and they hugged, and, you know, I mean, to me, there has to be something else. Otherwise, I mean, is Kraft's hugging him after? I'm trying to think of a way to say this that isn't going to offend anybody, but after Goodell sort of had his way with him.
Yeah.
So, Senior.
Without the benefit of a wraparound.
Exactly. Senior, what's your take? I want to hear your take on Kraft, and I want to hear your take on Deflategate as a whole. Now that the report's out, now that the punishment's been handed out, and now that the only thing pending is Brady's appeal.
Okay, I mean, I'm going to be of the opinion that I don't think the Patriots are guilty. But we don't even have to go there, okay? We don't even have to go there. Even if we want to say, for the sake of our discussion, they were guilty, the punishment absolutely ridiculous. The worst punishment that any team's ever gotten in the history of the NFL for a couple of PSIs of air in a football, which is nothing, is totally, totally ridiculous. And I really, and I'm starting to believe it more and more, that the NFL does not like the idea that the Patriots win so much. It's built. It's since the inception of free agency and a hard cap and everything else, the NFL is completely designed. The model is designed that if you're good, if you get real good and win a championship, you're going to get bad because your players are now going to be worth more money. You're not going to be able to pay them all because of the hard cap, and you're not going to be getting a high draft pick and everything else, and you're going to get worse. It's designed for the team to not to be able to sustain success. And that model has worked, totally worked, except for the Patriots. They've totally defied the model. They're the only team that's maintained. They're consistently there every year. And this is how they do it is amazing. They let guys walk every year. And everybody, and we're all here in New England, and this year it's Revis, and, you know, you can go back and name guys going all the way back to Lawyer Malloy, and, oh, it was the end of the world, you know, and it happens every year, and the fans are all up in arms, and then they figure, hey, we do this every year, and we come back and win. And I think the league really has it in for them. I was talking with a friend of mine who's one of the more intelligent football fans, one of the more intelligent people that I know. I'll even name his name, even though it's not celebrity. For us, it is, because you guys know him, Paul Gauthier. And he firmly believes this. I thought I was one of the only people that was taking it to that extreme, but he's taking it even further to that extreme than me. He said, this year, when the schedule came out, he was pissed off. And he said, it's so obvious, right there by the schedule, that they're just trying to do the Patriots in. Everybody has a couple of challenges in their schedule. I've got a quick list here that I'm going to read off. And then, oh, you'll say, oh, yeah, that's going to happen to everybody, but not this many times, okay? Starts right off with the bye week. Week 4, the worst bye week you can have, the first week. What the heck good does that do, you having a bye week in week 4? It's the Patriots in Tennessee. And as Paul said, they obviously didn't give it to them. You shouldn't be giving that to a contender. Who the hell cares about Tennessee, but they do it to the Patriots? Okay. I'll just go through it quick. Week 6, the Pats are at Indy. After being at Dallas the week before, very, very difficult going at Dallas, then at Indy. Tough back-to-back. What's Indy coming off? They're playing Thursday night in week 5. They get the long week to prepare. Week 9, the Pats play Washington. Oh, man, I scribbled this. And off of a Sunday night, and Washington's coming off a bye week. Week 11. Oh man, somebody's at New England on Monday night. Oh, Buffalo's at New England on a Monday night in week 11. Buffalo's coming off playing the previous Thursday. Long week to prepare. The following week after that, they go from at Buffalo to at Denver. On a short week, they have to go to Denver. My God, I can't read my notes. There's something else there. I'm sorry. I wish I could read it. Okay, but anyway, that's a real tough combination. Week after going to Denver, week 13, Philly's at New England. What's Philly coming off of? Playing Thanksgiving.
Right.
Yeah, this many times. Week 16, the Pats are at the Jets. And the Jets play on Saturday in week 15 and get an extra day to prepare for that. So that's 7 times in a 16-game schedule that they're put at a disadvantage. I mean, I know it happens to everybody sometimes, but this is a little too much of a pattern. And I'm telling you, they got it in for the Patriots. There is no doubt in my mind. Now I'm going to give you my take on Mr. Kraft yesterday, which, I mean, I was livid. I got out of work at 1 o'clock. I was going to babysit my grandchildren with my wife. And I said, we got to put the radio on. Kraft's going to be on. And he started talking about, and after about 10 seconds, I said, that effing asshole is caving. I could tell. And, oh, man, was I pissed. But this is the way I see it after I thought about it. There's kind of two sides to Bob Kraft, and he kind of tried to explain that to us when he said, I'm the guy who was a diehard Patriot fan his whole life, a season ticket holder. And that Bob Kraft was the guy who was defiant, reacting just like we all are, like all the Patriot fans who are lining up, pissed off that they were doing this to his team. That was his initial reaction. He carried that for a while. He gets to the owner's meeting. It's been a while. And there's this other side of Bob Kraft, who is one of the most successful businessmen in the United States of America. Tremendous businessman. And these guys are in his ear about all this good of the league stuff. And, hey, Bob, you're about making money. You're a great businessman. You know, this isn't good. This really isn't good. The best thing is to just accept it for the good of the league. You got to swallow it even for your team. And he's thinking it over. You know, we got this great deal going, Bob. We got the best moneymaker in professional sports, the NFL. We can't let it go bad. And I think the businessman side of Bob Kraft, in the end, trumped the Patriot fan, Patriot season ticket holder, emotional side of Bob Kraft. And that's he said, I got to do the reasonable thing. I'm a businessman. That's the way. Basically, that's what he's done his whole life. That's why he's so successful. That's why the guy's probably about a billionaire, you know, is because in the end, after he thinks things over, he does what's best for business. He feels what he's doing is best for the NFL, best for business. And so he accepted. That's my feeling.
So you don't think that there's any, you believe?
Absolutely not. I don't think it's to save Tom. I think if anything, it could hurt Tom's legacy. Because now if Tom beats this thing, I shouldn't even say that it matters because all the haters are going to hate anyway. But the whole rest of the country, the us against the world mentality, they're all going to say, well, Tom was really guilty, but Kraft made a deal. You know, I think Tom could have beat this on his own. I think if he took the NFL to court, he'd walk all over him. There's holes all over that Wells report. He would destroy him. So, And as far as I'm concerned, as a Patriot fan, honestly, if Tom doesn't win with Goodell and he decides to take the NFL to court, and because he's taking him to court and these things take time, he would probably have to serve the whole four-game suspension. Even if that means it really kills the Pats and they don't make the playoffs because of that, I don't care. I'd be behind them. That guy's earned that from me as a Patriot fan. I mean, I've been a fan a long time. I would have killed for one Super Bowl because of number 12 and a lot of other people, but mainly because of number 12. We have four of them. He's handled himself a complete class his whole career. He's represented us so well. The fans, his teammates, everyone in New England should just be behind him and say, right now the most important thing is to let Tom completely clear his name, and then we'll go on from there. We owe this to him. So to say, take a lighter scent, you know, accept the compromise and come back after a game or two because, you know, the team can use you on the field, and aren't you a team player, Tom? Bullshit. He's been a team player his whole career. He's always worked his contract out to allow them to, you know, have more cap space. He's constantly reworking. He's done everything. He's been our leader. He's been nothing but a team player. It's time for us to do something for him. It's time for everybody to rally behind Tom Brady. I think he deserves it. I don't think there's an athlete in the history of New England in my whole life who's deserved it more than Tom Brady. Deserved our backing for the player he's been, for the championships he's won, and for the person he's been, the way he's represented New England. So I am 100% behind him, and there's nothing I want more than Tom to clear his name. That means more to me than winning right now, because he's won so much for us.
All right, Senior. So I have a couple of comments. What I mean, in the appeal, I don't think that you can argue that he didn't cooperate with the investigation. And if they're going to suspend him if they throw out whatever they say is for deflating the footballs and suspend him for not cooperating with the investigation, I don't know how he doesn't take that.
I think he cooperated with the investigation. The only thing he did that didn't cooperate with the investigation was give his cell phone to Ted Wells. Why the hell should he give his cell phone to Ted Wells? Do you trust Ted Wells?
Well, they said that...
If he takes the NFL to court, he would have no choice but to hand his cell phone over. And you know what? If I'm him, I'd be thinking that all along. I don't have any problem with handing my phone to the courts. I trust the courts. I don't trust this freaking guy. This guy's working for the NFL. This guy's out to take any information he can and twist it to fit the case that he's trying to build up for Goodell and the NFL. I'm not giving that clown my phone. I don't have to give him my phone. It's bullshit. I'll be happy to give it to a judge. I trust the judge. I trust the court system. I don't trust Ted Wells. Tom was well within his rights. You know, there could be things on there, you know. Look at the conversation.
Senior, before we go on, so Wells came out and said that he didn't have to give him his phone. He asked for written transcripts of any text messages or emails that were pertinent to this.
And again, why did he? And again, he could give him the written transcripts, and Wells interpreting stuff like the conversations between Jastrzemski and McNally. A lot of that stuff might have been jocularity. You're sending little texts between yourselves, two guys. Wells' interpretation of these things, that they were all 100% serious, and like him saying, oh, I'm going to inflate it to 26 pounds this time and all this. I mean, these guys could have been just joking around. It's like having a conversation between friends that you don't think you're ever going to share with anyone. Give it to that guy. I wouldn't give him anything. Give it to a judge, no problem. That's why I want Tom to take him to court.
Right.
In fact, even if they reduce it to no games but include that implied that there's some guilt on his part, I would still take him to court to clear his name.
I mean, he would win in court. It's a different burden of proof in court. The fact of the matter is, though, that you know he plays in the NFL, and this is the NFL, you know, as an employee of the NFL, this is how the NFL handles these things, right? And if you don't cooperate, I mean, you said he cooperated, but he except he didn't cooperate. So he didn't cooperate, right? I mean, he didn't fully cooperate, and they can punish you for that. And when we discussed this beforehand, I thought he would get a game or two for the deflation once the report came out, for the deflation slash cooperation issue. And I mean, I think when Justin and I talked about this, I think there was a big, you know, this could have gone away a long time ago, and both sides made some mistakes. The Patriots probably didn't handle it best at first, right? Having the awkward press conference and yada yada. Like, you know what Justin said, I don't disagree with this, is, you know, week after the Super Bowl, you come out and you say, I never intentionally deflated a ball before, you know, below the PSI level. I told these guys, which is what I think actually happened, is, you know, the guys know that he likes the ball a certain way, and, you know, no one's ever told him he couldn't do it. So, and it's a, you know, misunderstanding, and they give him the $25,000 fine and or whatever it is in the collective bargaining agreement, and everybody's done with it. But they took this hard stance and said, fuck you to the league. Okay, so now the report comes out, and again, there's a chance for it all to go away. There's no question in my mind that if they give Brady one game and they fine the Patriots $500,000, that what Kraft said in his original response to the report before the punishment came down, which was, you know, I think it's bullshit, but we're all part of the same league and we'll take it. And I don't think that Brady would have appealed a one-game suspension, even if they say it's for not turning over your cell phone or your cell phone records. But the NFL, and I think they did this solely because they were pissed off. And Goodell's a guy who's shown that he doesn't like when his authority's questioned. And the Patriots definitely questioned the authority. The agent, everybody came out very, very strongly. So Goodell said, screw you, here's what I'm doing. And now that gives the story even more legs, right? And now it's going to go on and on and on. And my personal feeling is there's no way Kraft does that if there's not some kind of, it has to be attached to something for Brady. I mean, he looks like a moron. He came out 3 days before, super defiant, or a week before, whatever it was. Really, really defiant. And then just, I mean, if there's nothing else attached to it, you know, a backroom kind of deal, then, I mean, he just looks weak. And it's a terrible look for Bob Kraft when he had the leverage. Once Goodell said that he was going to be the arbiter, Kraft had all the leverage, because there's no right. Goodell, I mean, I think he's doing it out of spite, but there's no way that he looks good being the arbiter, right? If he upholds the suspension, well, you're just upholding the suspension that you handed down. There's a direct conflict of interest. If he lightens the suspension, it's, well, what's different now than 3 weeks ago when you gave him four games? And nobody thinks that that's Troy Vincent giving that suspension, right, and giving that punishment. No. Everybody, I mean, without checking with Goodell, no way, right? So,
but it doesn't this make that all worse? Like, now, if he cuts it down to one game, say, like, you know, we're going to follow your logic, and Kraft made a backdoor deal. Aren't all everybody else going to be up in arms saying you cut a deal with Kraft? That's the only reason. It's the only reason you're reducing this suspension. How's he going to justify reducing it? I think it all looks worse.
I don't think it looks worse.
From the Patriots' point of view, it makes it look like there's some guilt on Brady.
I think that the punishment, that's
going to be the prevailing opinion. Well, he beat it because Kraft made a deal.
The punishment.
So I think it was a terribly bad move.
The punishment didn't fit the crime. I think Goodell knows that. The Goodell's leaking that the punishment was too severe. And, I mean, clearly the punishment was too severe. So now, to me, it makes all the sense in the world. I don't know how you feel, Keith, but, you know, you have the Patriots, you have Kraft sort of lying, I don't want to say lying down, but Kraft taking the guillotine. That's going to appease the other owners. I mean, it's a big deal. A first-round pick's a big freaking deal. And yeah. Brady, who the case against is the weakest, and who you can justify. I think it's severe, but you can justify paid. You know, you can justify coming down real hard on the Patriots as multiple time offenders, you know, in essence, got caught cheating multiple times, organizational failure. You can justify that. There's no justification for this, for what they gave Brady, because he's been a choir boy his whole career, never had an issue. I mean, they reduced Sue. They didn't give Sue the suspension because they said he was a first-time offender because he hadn't gotten popped for anything in a year. I mean, Brady has been in the league for 15 years and has never had any issue at all. So I think this is going to get – I think you might see it reduced to zero. But I think at the most would be two. And this gives them an out. Well, we came hard down hard on the organization after relooking at the facts. You know, and looking, you know, the case that the Patriots made, there really is no precedent for giving them a suspension for deflating the footballs, even if he did it, so we're not going to do it. Keith, what do you think? You haven't weighed in yet.
Yeah, I do see the suspension getting reduced, but if not eliminated totally. And Goodell could always say, you know what, he brought me his cell phone. I saw the messages, and therefore I said, okay. You know, and then cut it that way. You're right. Goodell's not going to look good either way. If he appeases, you know, cuts that suspension down, the rest of the league's going to be up in arms about it. If he upholds it, New England will be up in arms about it. But I don't know. I think, personally, I think Tom Brady ordered the code red. Maybe he didn't say, I want him at 10 PSI. I want him at 12.5. And I think, what's his name, McNally, did what he had to do to please his quarterback. That's what I think happens. But that punishment is unprecedented, way too much. It should have been one or the other, in my opinion. Either you suspend Brady, or you find the team and take the draft pick, but not all of the above. That's just too much for me. But I do think that Brady had some hand in it. He knew about it. He had to. That guy's not going to risk his job and touch those footballs unless Brady wanted it done. But I still love Brady. You know, he's still my guy. He possibly made a mistake that might, you know, stain him for the rest of his career now and his legacy, but he's still the greatest quarterback I think I've ever seen. That's about how I feel.
I totally believe that no one was ever putting gauges into balls before this. They're going now. I like the way this feels, and that's all it was. And that's the way every quarterback did it. And I have full reason to believe that Walt Anderson, or an NFL referee, wasn't putting a gauge in a ball. That it was accepted procedure. And whatever way the quarterback likes it, that's fine. Unless you put a ball out there and it was completely flat or something, then they pump it up.
Right.
Or the ball was ready to explode. I don't think football, okay, I can tell you that when this first came out, when it first happened, I have some kind of inside knowledge on this sort of thing. And I spoke to some guys who I'm friends with who are college football referees, and I couldn't find one who owned an air pressure gauge. Whereas there are sports that check air before games, before every single game. And any referee that referees a sport like that, I can name one, volleyball, any referee that referees it would not walk into a facility at any level, junior, high school, college, Olympic, without an air gauge and wouldn't check the balls and get them right. Football officials would look at that and say, it's a sissy sport. Look at these guys with their air gauge. What the heck is that thing? I'm telling you. Nobody checked air. It's all bullshit in my mind.
Well, they checked it in the Indianapolis game.
Well, yeah, that's because all the Indianapolis told them to.
No, they checked it before the game because of the...
That's what Walt Anderson said. That's what he said he did. I don't believe him. I totally don't believe him. He had to say that.
Well, no, because the league told the league.
And he said he didn't write it down. Yeah, they told him. I still don't think he did it. He said he didn't write it down. He said he didn't know which gauge he used. I don't believe a word of it. I think even when the league told him that, they thought this was the... They're doing a championship game, and that flew by him. We're going out here to do a title game. We're not worried about how much air is in the ball. You know how many things we got to go over, how much we want to get this game right. That's the last thing those guys are thinking about. I'm telling you. I'm convinced of that.
Do you think he lied to Wells?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, see, you're a little off the reservation, I think, here.
Well,
absolutely.
He had to.
What else could he say?
But the Colts complained about it before the game, and the league told them to do it, even if they never did it before.
Yeah. I think it wasn't a big enough deal. I mean, they heard it, and check the balls. Yeah, okay, we'll check the balls. Yeah, we'll put an air gauge in. They squeeze the balls. Yeah, these are fine.
I think it's a common thing that happens. I don't think it's a big deal. I think the punishment didn't fit the crime, but I mean, there certainly is a crime if they screw with the ball after the ref inspects it. I mean,
that has not been proven to me by any stretch. The Wells report did not prove that to me, that guy was taking air out of those balls when he went and took a whiz. That's bullshit. I don't believe any of it. I'm telling you, I'm being honest with you. It's not just totally that I'm a Patriot fan. If it was any other team, I know how football officials operate. Those guys aren't checking balls. That's the last thing in the world they're worried about. They'd laugh at that. I'm telling you, now it's all going to change. But telling you, they don't.
I mean, like Aaron Rodgers came out.
Yeah, that's good.
Rodgers came out and said that he overinflates it, and sometimes the refs take the air out of it.
Yeah, because they feel it, and it feels too hard to them. So they stick a pin in
right,
and take
but
a,
then,
like a basketball referee. A basketball referee is going to walk on the court. He's got a pin in his pocket when he walks on the court because they give you the ball at the table, and they feel the ball, and they bounce it. And if it feels too bouncy, they stick a pin in and take care of it. They'll never inflate it more. Because in a basketball game, an overinflated ball is going to be real sloppy, and you're going to be blowing your whistle a whole lot, and referees don't want to do that. They'll be there forever. The ball's not going to stay in the basket. The guys are going to lose control more. They want the ball to be not too inflated. No basketball referee walks on the court without a pin in his pocket.
So, but again, we do agree
they're
that
not putting a gauge in it. They're just feeling it, bouncing it. I don't like this. It's a little too bouncy for me.
We do agree that the refs check the balls, though. Like they at least feel the ball, you know.
Well, yeah, right. They have to initial it and all that.
They feel it, and do you realize that what a wide variance there is? I mean, the umpire, the guy that sets that ball down every play, all season long, is handling the ball every single play, and he did it that whole first half of that game, and didn't notice that they were underinflated. So come on. It really, I don't believe any of it. I don't believe any of the bullshit. I think the Patriots just got screwed on this. I mean, if this was any kind of how come he didn't notice? If this is really a problem, you're handling balls all the time because they all feel different. This quarterback likes them this way. It's the last thing in the world they're thinking about is how much air is in a freaking football. This is the biggest joke in the history of professional sports, and they've got levied this huge penalty. That's why I want them to take it to the limit and beat it. It's a shame that if this is any kind of a stain on Brady's record because he didn't do anything wrong. Bullshit. It's complete bullshit. Ever since him and Peyton Manning rallied the troops to get that change that you could bring each team bring their old balls so the quarterback can have the balls the way they like it, they let them go the way they like it. That's just accepted. What they do, that's the way you like it. No problem.
So senior again. I'm not trying to come down on you, senior. This is a very pro Patriot argument. So one of the other things you said was that the NFL had it out for the Pats because of their history of success.
Absolutely.
So why doesn't I point, and Keith, I don't know where you are at with this, but I point to the Pats' history of success as two things. They have the best coach in the NFL, and they have the best quarterback in the NFL. And you can change all the parts around that, and they're going to be successful. So if the NFL has a problem with success, like you said, why hasn't anything happened to Peyton Manning, who's been just as successful as the Patriots?
No, he hasn't.
I mean, it's close. I mean, it's continued excellence, Senior. I mean, it's, you know, you're splitting hairs.
I mean, the Pats are a Super Bowl contender every year. Every year for 15 years. There's no team that it's even close to that the last 15 years.
When was the last time a healthy
Peyton? They've all had their down years.
When was Peyton Manning's last down year when he was healthy? Has he ever finished below 500? I mean, for his rookie season, I don't think so.
Oh no, they're always contenders too. But they can't beat the Patriots.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a flawed argument. I mean, that's a guy that's been. I mean, he's been continually excellent wherever he goes. Right, and his team.
He's won one Super Bowl.
Right.
And gotten into how many title games? I mean, it's not even close, Raj. It's not even close.
Okay.
I mean, he's had success, but not like the Patriots. No way.
I mean, it's similar. Huh. I mean, if you're saying they want parity,
they've been in how many AFC title games? It's like every year. Every year, if they don't go at least go to the AFC title game, it's like everybody feels like, what the hell's wrong with the Patriots this year? There's no other organization like that, and the NFL does not like it.
But they're okay with Peyton Manning going 13-3 every year.
Go 13-3 every year. He doesn't get as far as the Pats every year. He doesn't. He doesn't have as much success. He's trying to get over the top all the time. He got there once. He won one Super Bowl. It doesn't even compare to the Patriots' success.
So why didn't this happen in the past? You know, with like the years that the Cowboys and the Niners would just...
Because the league wasn't designed that way then.
The league didn't have a hard cap then?
And free agency? Since how long have we had free agency and a hard cap? Since how long has the league been designed the way it is now? About 15, 20 years. The Patriots have totally dominated. Nobody else can do it. I mean, these are ridiculous. You heard the things I pointed out on the schedule. You going to tell me that's a coincidence? That the same team's getting screwed that many times? 7 out of their 16 games, they're at a huge position of disadvantage. 7 times? Yeah, it happens to everybody, maybe twice.
How many of those games the Patriots are in primetime games, though? Like, you know, the national games.
Yeah, but why? So what? Why does the team they're playing have to be playing the previous Thursday so many times? I mean, come on. I mean, why don't you just say...
Yeah.
Well, if you play on Thursday night, you get a 50-50 shot of playing the Patriots because that's who's going to be playing them next week. It's almost gotten to that point. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. I mean, they did everything they could to them. They're trying to knock them down. And now the Spygate was a big joke, too. These things are all jokes there. I'm telling you, they don't like the Patriots' success.
All right, so Senior got to say his piece. The league has it out for the Patriots, and Tom Brady didn't do anything wrong, and the Patriots didn't.
And I'm standing behind that guy 100% because he's earned it from me.
He's going to take the deal, whatever it is, if they offer him anything.
For the good of the team. If I was his teammates, if I was everybody else, I'd say don't take it, Tom.
I don't think it's for the good of the team.
Take care of yourself this time.
I mean, you have to at least consider the possibility, Senior, that he doesn't want to go to court and give him his cell phone. I mean, it has to at least be a possibility that there's something on there that he wouldn't even give the transcripts. What the hell does he care if his text messages with McNally or whoever are public?
Because I wouldn't give it to Wells. I wouldn't give that guy anything. That guy's going to twist anything you give him. Screw him. I mean, I have no problem giving it to him.
I mean, but the report wasn't out yet.
No, but it's going to. He knows. Who knows what he's going to put out there, and who knows how he's going to handle it. I don't like the way he interpreted any piece of information he got.
Right, but Brady didn't know that when he asked him for his cell phone.
Well, he saw how the guy operated before. You heard that the offensive line coach for the Dolphins said how Wells operated in the Jonathan Martin investigation. What a piece of garbage Wells is. I mean, you don't think Brady looked at that history saying, oh, no, this piece of shit is investigating me?
Do you feel that Richie Incognito got a raw deal?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying that Wells goes in with an agenda. There's no doubt about it. You know who he's working for. I'm not sticking
that, I believe.
Incognito. Let's not twist it that way. I'm saying that the guy goes
that
in.
That was the big loser.
No doubt who he's working for. He's not going in unbiased, trying to find the truth. He's going in trying to
prove a case, basically.
That they want him to prove. It's not, Goodell can say all he wants that it's an independent investigation. It's bullshit. The NFL's paying him. I mean, come on.
Yeah. All right.
I am deflated. I know that.
I am deflated as well. We're going to take a break. When I come back, Keith and Senior are going to have to leave the lounge. But Chad Campbell and I are going to talk about this weekend's big UFC fights. Really, really good card this weekend. Senior, thank you for coming on with your opinions. I'll be leaving in my
Brady jersey.
Yes, you're a homer through and through. Everybody has an opinion. Your opinions are respected. I don't personally agree with everything you said, but that's okay. That's why we're here. So until next week, for Senior and Keith, thank you guys. And Cowboy will be right back after the break. So on the break, you'll hear about all the other great content here at Place to Be Nation, whether you're a wrestling fan, pop culture enthusiast, or a sports fan. The Place to Be Nation is where you want to be. So. Cowboy out. Just for a moment.
The baffled king composing hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah, hallelujah. Your faith was strong, but you needed proof. You saw her bathing on the roof. Her beauty and the moonlight overthrew you. She tied you to a kitchen chair. She broke your throne, she cut your hair, and from your lips she drew the hallelujah.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself as Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews, our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews, and WWE Network live watches. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you, including the main event, featuring a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, WrestleChat.net's Still Real to Us podcast with Jeff Peck, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on what we should be excited about in the world of wrestling today. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We featured The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, as well as the twice-weekly Bauer Show, The Kings of Sport, featuring live audio wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Lounge, hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., often visited by special guests from inside the world of sports, as well as the NBA Team podcast with Adam Murray and Andrew Reich for the deep dive into the world of pro hoops. As mentioned, all of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also the home to tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keith's RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net for their support.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN podcast network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber.
The Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network, it's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
Hope everyone enjoyed the break. Welcome back to the Sports Lounge. Cowboy here, still reeling from that 45 minutes of, you know, we try to keep things down the middle here on the Sports Lounge, and you know, little biases can get in every once in a while, but senior, he's a homer. You know, he lived through all the Patriot down years, and I mean, he'd lay his life down for Tom Brady. That's what I've gathered from his speech. Enough of that. Senior and Keith had to take off, like we said, but we have an oldie but goodie here. One of the original members of the Sports Lounge, who lasted a couple of episodes, and now he's back at episode 32 to talk some UFC with Chad Campbell. What's going on, Chad?
Doing pretty good, Roger. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. That's not even really true. We played some basketball tonight out at Mr. Flanagan's court. My team got the W, but the guy they had guard me, great guy, good friend, but he was rough with me, you know. So I'm sore. And then we had the senior stuff. That was tough.
Yeah, I was wondering if you guarded Justin, because y'all are about the same height, right?
No, Justin's an inside guy. He's got quite a bit more beef than I do.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I'm a point guard. We never guard each other.
All right.
It would be bad for both of us on defense, because I'm a point guard. I'm, you know, by quite a bit quicker than Justin. But then if I were guarding him, he could just run me over every time. Nothing I could do about it. So Justin and Andy actually guard each other the whole game, every game. And
that seems like a mismatch if you see them.
They're best friends, but oh, they go at it, man. I mean, if they weren't such good friends, I swear that they would punch each other in the face after every game. Speaking of punching each other in the face, huge card coming up on Saturday. UFC 187. UFC fans have been treated to some not that robust pay-per-views recently, whether it be due to injury or, you know, they have a lot of titles now, so we get, you know, we get a card where Rousey fights, and then the rest of the card's not that good. Complete opposite here. We have two main event, I mean, probably the two best fights you can make almost in MMA right now, as the two, as the main event and the co-main event. Anthony Rumble Johnson, I love Rumble, Chad, I love him, versus Daniel Cormier for the now vacant light heavyweight championship, vacated by John Jones, who's looking to go down as one of the biggest wastes of talent in history. I don't know what's going on with that guy. I really hope he gets his life together.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for him, it's a wait and see. So,
man, you know, but first the positive cocaine test is what it is. You know, he's a young guy. He's going out partying. In a vacuum, that's understandable. But this is real bad.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. Everything that's came out about this hit and run has gotten worse because, I mean, the preliminary report was under investigation for the hit and run. Then apparently, he ran from the scene, then came back and
to get money.
Yeah, to get money in his marijuana pipe, supposedly. So it doesn't look good. I mean, it's been upgraded to a felony. I don't know.
You know, anytime you hit a car because you ran, or I think he ran a red light.
He sped,
and it was a pregnant girl in the car who you injured somewhat severely. And then you leave, and then you come back to grab your wad of cash in your weed pipe,
right.
And then you leave again.
Not a good look. So yeah, I mean, this is kind of, I mean, he's really, I mean, I think besides the Gustafson fight, he's kind of been the pillar of the light heavyweight division for 4+ years now. So,
if not the whole UFC, I mean, I think it's tough to argue anyone else is the best pound for pound fighter in the world. You know, I mean, he's dominated everybody outside of the Gustafson fight, and he won that fight. It's not like
right,
he didn't win. And the UFC loves him. He's real, very marketable guy. So, I mean, it had to kill Dana White to strip him like this. But I think they made the right move.
Yeah, I think they had to. Yeah, they had to. I mean, once GSP retired or whatever, he was definitely going to be probably portrayed as the signature poster boy, just because of his dominance in his division. And UFC throughout their history has always tried to portray the light heavyweight division as kind of their marquee division as a whole. I mean, that had Chuck Liddell and some other big stars throughout their lineage.
Tito.
Yeah, Tito was prominent in there in the early aughts. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of it's a big disappointment, but it gives way to what should be a very exciting fight.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. Johnson versus Cormier. Man, it's a tough fight to call. On paper, you think Cormier, right? He's only fought, you know, he's destroyed everybody he's fought except Jones, and
right.
He just had he's 5'11", and Jones eats short guys for lunch. You know, the Gustafson's. Gustafson's edge in that fight was he was taller than Jones, and Jones pretty much didn't know how to deal with it. But, you know, Cormier, he had a couple of decent rounds, but eventually Jones took over. Rumble is on such a roll, though. I mean, he has looked ridiculously good since coming back as a light heavyweight. That, I mean, it's a toss-up for me. I'm gonna have to make a pick here. And I will, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so, I mean, Rumble was one of those guys that when, I mean, he was peddling in middleweight, and it's not like he was, I wouldn't say he was disappointing, but it was almost like he was kind of, I don't know, like a gatekeeper type role, it felt like. I mean, he beat some guys, he lost some, I mean, then he couldn't make weight. I mean, he started out
welterweight,
and then welterweight. Right.
He blew weight at welterweight,
which is ridiculous. Like, he would come in I mean, this is somebody that would, I know at some points he came in like 8 pounds over. So we're not talking about he weighed 172. It was, he threw up some like 177, 178s there. And then they cut him after the loss to Vito, right? Because he missed weight, Belfort. So he ended up leaving USC and was kind of, in my mind, a little bit forgotten because by that point in time, I wasn't really following some of the lesser promotions in MMA. But yeah, since he's came back, he has looked very impressive, kind of going through people with beating Phil Davis, who's a very accomplished wrestler.
Easy. Beat him easy. I mean, right, killed right. him.
And then getting two pretty powerful knockout type wins over Little Nog and Gustafson. So it's interesting. I mean, because Cormier, like you said, the only time he ran into trouble was against Jones so far. And I'm really interested to see where this fight takes place because obviously Cormier should have the wrestling advantage, but I wouldn't say Johnson is a slouch. Like I said, he beat Phil Davis, who's a very accomplished wrestler. Johnson was a JUCO national champion. So while I would expect Cormier could take him down, I don't know if it may be more of kind of like a clinch battle. And if they get that close and in the clinch, I can see Johnson firing off some very powerful shots. And it's weird. It's going to be interesting because I would think Johnson would want space and would want to try to keep it standing. He should have an advantage there. But I don't know if he's going to be absolutely terrified of if it does come to a clinch in a wrestling matchup like most opponents versus Cormier would be.
Yeah, no, and I think Johnson will have the ability to use wrestling defensively in this fight to keep it on the feet. I mean, Cormier's a great, great wrestler. But to your point, Johnson's a very, very good wrestler. I think you're selling Cormier a little bit... excuse me. I think you're selling him a little bit short on the feet. Again, prior to the Jones fight, I mean, if you look at like his fights with Josh Barnett, for example... He stood up with him the whole fight and kicked in a very good, very crisp boxer, good power. It's just a tough fight to call. It really is. I'm picking Cormier. I think he's a little bit more well-rounded. Cardio for days. And in a five-round fight where the two guys are evenly matched, I think that could be a big factor. I mean, Johnson, because he's not cutting all that weight, his stamina has improved, but I think he still could have some gas tank issues with the pace that Cormier is going to press. And Cormier's a really, really tough guy. I mean, he just has that look of a guy who's really hard to knock out. And, I mean, Johnson, first and foremost, is a knockout artist. And, you know, if he hits you, you're probably going down, but Cormier's got that thick neck and that thick base. And if he gets into trouble, he can rely on that wrestling to get himself out of trouble. That I'm going to pick Cormier 48-47 on all three cards decision where he wins the last two rounds of the fight to do it.
Yeah, that I mean, Cormier, I don't think we've ever seen him in real trouble, have we, where he's kind of on the brink. I mean,
Even the Jones fight, he was never really, really, really hurt.
Yeah, I didn't get a sense that he was going to be finished at any point. But so that makes it odd to pick it, and it's also when you have the some guy that's kind of rose from the ashes to have a nice streak going together. I mean, last year we had the Matt Brown kind of renaissance. And that got sort of stopped short with Robbie Lawler. I mean, I think just based on skill, Rumble's more accomplished than somebody like Matt Brown on paper. But he is going up against Cormier, who's really accomplished. I mean, yeah, his stand-up has been – I've been very impressed because when he first signed with UFC, that was, of course, the big question. But he, you know, while his bread and butter still can be wrestling, it's not – He's also not scared. I think this is a great fight. I mean, I think if you're a fighters fan or USC fan, this is a great fight to watch because it could go on the mat. It could be a stand-up. And while both guys have clear strengths, their weaknesses compared to the other person isn't, you know, that alarming like you see sometimes in these big mismatches. Which actually we can kind of get to in our next fight. But I think I'm going to go with Rumble Johnson. I'm going to say a third round TKO, which would be an impressive feat. But
I love it, Chad. I hope it happens. I'm going. I love Rumble. I mean, I will be rude. And I don't dislike Cormier by any stretch. I think Rumble matched up better to Jones. I really do. I think Jones would stand with him more. And I mean, Rumble's so explosive. Cormier's a little more safety first than Jones.
Yeah.
And I think it's just going to be tough to get his chin. But yeah. I hope you're right. Rumble can knock anybody out. Anyone in the world, if he hits you right, he'll not. You know, he can take you out. I mean, he beat Andre Arlovsky at heavyweight when he was outside of the UFC. Andre Arlovsky was fighting on this card. But. So we'll see what happens there. I'm picking with my head, and I hope Chad's pick is correct.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this fight is, like we talked about a little bit at the beginning, Roger. I mean, it's loaded from the top. I mean, I wouldn't say these two guys are like household names or anything, but I think this is a really exciting fight, and it's one I hope people kind of get behind because, like I said, I don't think you've seen that many fights like this in the main event in UFC history that have been kind of that interesting of a matchup.
Right, and props to the UFC for putting it together after the Jones debacle.
Right,
too.
Right.
I mean, they didn't have to give the shot to Cormier coming off a loss, but I mean, I think he clearly deserves it.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, so not one but two title fights on this stacked card. Chris Weidman, the All-American, undefeated, versus Vitor, the Phenom Belfort. So if this was in Brazil, I mean, that's the elephant in the room with Belfort, right? He's been around longer than anybody. You know, he fought Tito Ortiz, he fought Liddell, he fought Randy Couture, and, you know, speaking of late career resurgences, he certainly has had a late career resurgence, and, you know, knocking everybody out, but he was using the testosterone replacement therapy, a very controversial testosterone replacement therapy. He's not going to be able to do that for this fight, and frankly, I think it's a big deal. I think it's a huge deal. If the Belfort that we saw in Brazil was coming into this fight, I would give him a real legit chance to catch Weidman. I mean, you forget, Belfort fought John Jones and almost submitted him in a fight that, I mean, that Jones a lot bigger than him, and almost, Belfort's got a real well-rounded game. He's a knockout artist, but he's also got very slick submissions. I think his big weakness is wrestling defense, which isn't going to help him much against Weidman. What are your thoughts, Chad?
Yeah, so this, like I sort of touched on in the previous fight, I mean, this is, to me, when you always have these talking heads for the countdown shows with stuff, sometimes Dana White would be like, you know, styles make fight, and this is certainly, on the paper, looks like a contrast in fight style, but whereas before, I thought Cormier was more accomplished, but Rumble wouldn't mind, you know, getting into a wrestling battle at points. I think here, I mean, it's almost like Belfort at all costs has to do anything in his arsenal to avoid making this a wrestling match, and I can't see any way he'll be able to do that. Or, I mean, Weidman has shown some ability to stand up to. He really kind of proved himself both in the Silva fights and then really I think in the Machida when Machida started coming on pretty strong in the third and fourth rounds of that fight, and he sort of took Machida's best shot and still came forward and ended up picking the decision there. I mean, you look at Belfort's record, because I just prepping for tonight's show, I mean, I knew, of course, Belfort, I knew he'd been around forever, and then I looked at his stats, and he's 24-10. You're like, man, that's a lot of losses. But then you look who he's lost to, and it's all, I mean, he doesn't have a bad loss, I would say, on his resume. Based on who he's lost to and when he's lost to the big names. But I mean, I think Weidman's kind of becoming that person too, where he is going to be a big name and a big deal, at least for the foreseeable future. So I see this as a pretty easy victory for Weidman personally.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you can discount that Belfort hasn't fought in a year and a half either.
Yeah, he's had a long layoff.
I mean, the deck is definitely stacked against him. With all that said, Belfort knows what he has to do. He did this against Jones. I mean, he's going to go for it.
Yeah.
He's not going to, you know, he's not going to fool himself into thinking he's winning a decision. You know, he knows every second that they're standing, that's his chance. So he's going to throw head kick. I mean, he had 3 head kick knockouts in a row, I believe. So he's going to be throwing the head kicks. When Weidman shoots, he's going to be throwing the knees, and he can take him out. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but I would not be shocked if Belfort hit him with some crazy flying knee and knocked him out. That could happen, right? But the smart money is Weidman. I mean, Weidman's a very, very, very good fighter. We really still don't, and he's young. You know, he's still kind of scratching the surface. But to your point, the Machida fight, he showed some vulnerability in that fight. But, you know, he also showed that he can pull through. But to me, if Belfort doesn't basically take him out in the first round, I don't see any way that he can win.
Yeah, I think this is a first round, or he's going to be in trouble. I mean, I'll say I think Weidman will probably be able to I can see Weidman maybe. It's tough to say. I mean, we haven't really, I guess, seen we've seen Weidman do some KOs.
I don't think Belfort will stand there with his hands down.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So, I guess I'll probably go unanimous decision if I had to guess on what the path to victory will be for Weidman.
I think he stops him, Chad. I think it was a three-round fight, I would say, near unanimous decision. But I see it going a lot like Belfort's fights with Couture, where Weidman just takes him down early and often, and just ground and pound, ground and pound, ground and pound, and stops him, I'm just say fourth round, either through ground and pound, repeated ground and pound, or like an arm triangle from the top, where Belfort's exhausted, frustrated, and not offering much resistance, and kind of gives into that. But another thing to point out, though, is Belfort's real dangerous off his back early. Again, it's got to be early.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Weidman really has to be careful early in this fight. I mean, he really does, because Belfort, he is explosive. And, you know, I mean, the testosterone replacement therapy, is it going to make him a little slower? I don't know. I think one thing for sure is that it'll hurt his stamina not being on that. And so I think it's a 5-minute fight for Belfort. If he doesn't win it in the first 5 minutes, he might as well just not come out for the second round.
Right. On the countdown show, there was a lot of clips with Belfort in his gi doing his jiu-jitsu. So he was trying to portray that he was going to use that. But
that's another path to victory for him. I mean, he's, you know, wrestlers are notoriously susceptible to submissions.
Some chokes, yeah.
Right? So, yeah. You know, look at a guy like Sonnen, look at when Tito tapped Bader.
Right.
You know, Brock Lesnar against Frank Mir. I mean, so, again, it's got to happen when they're dry. It's got to happen when Belfort's got a lot in the tank. But, I mean, he almost submitted John Jones. I mean, he locked up an arm bar on John Jones and, like, hyperextended his arm, but Jones kept fighting, you know? Mm-hmm. So, if he could do that to John Jones, he certainly has the ability to do it to Weidman. But Weidman is a You know, I think what's underrated about him, or what people don't know, just one of the things that I watch when I'm watching, he's got that, he's a real smart fighter. You know, I mean, I feel like he's exciting, but I feel like he's smart enough to not get caught in something like that, and smart enough to know to be careful, and smart enough, you know, and not get sucked into some shootout early with Belfort. He doesn't strike me as that kind of kid, even against Anderson Silva in the first fight, the biggest fight of his life. Silva was doing all that shit, and Weidman, you know, just kept his hands up and kept, you know, just working his game, and that impressed me.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen somebody even like Bones Jones have some perils in his fight. I mean, he had it with Belfort. He had it at times with Gustafson. Even, you know, back to his Rashad Evans fight that I watched live, there was glimpses of moments there. But Weidman feels to me in sort of the GSP vein in that regard, that he has a very solid game plan going into these fights, and he doesn't betray from that. And it's been certainly a path to success so far. We'll see if he can keep it up.
It's going to be good. So a couple of other, there's two more fights on the card that I want to talk about.
All right.
Cowboy Cerrone.
Yeah, your boy.
He's my boy. He's so good. How that guy hasn't gotten a title shot is beyond me. It's ridiculous. But I love him. You know, he's a fighter's fighter, Chad. He's in line. He's in line for a title shot. I just want to keep fighting. I just want to keep fighting. I don't know if that's because he wants to just keep getting paid, but he's very good.
And yeah, he's not afraid to. I mean, we're seeing more where, I guess, you know, guys are taking. You know, I mean, it's not uncommon to see one, maybe two fights a year, and he's been diligent that he's had, you know, at least three, four fights a year. For the past, as far as I can remember, he certainly is not scared to get in there and fight within a couple month break or even a couple week break as he did in January.
And won.
Yeah, and crazy beat Henderson. He's got to be in line. I mean, if he wins this, they got to set him up for the title fight, I got to think.
Yeah, I mean, it's a loaded division. It's an absolutely loaded division, and I think that's what's hurt him a little bit. But so, yeah, we'll see what happens. But I mean, he should win this fight.
Yeah. So I mean, Magdeski is a replacement. I mean, I'd say solid, but yeah, this should be kind of a primer of sorts for Cowboy, and hopefully he will get Dos Anjos. I think that would be an exciting fight. I mean, they fought before. I'd like to see it again. So I can see this being maybe you think KO? You think submission?
KO. I like him by KO.
Yeah.
Cowboy, he closes the show, man. The Cowboy doesn't like to leave it to the judges.
So now but you've talked about the USC cards before, and even though I don't think this will be a kind of fair comparative or exciting fight per se, but that, I mean, Cowboy Cerrone is a pretty good name to have third from the top, and if we do the next fight that I think you do, I mean, that's also a really good fight to have on the main card. Whereas I'd say 4 or 5 years ago, I mean, something like the Uriah Faber Frankie Edgar fight that we just saw do a fight night this past weekend, something like that, that would have been on pay per view and been a third from the top or second from the top fight. But now they've put those on the fight nights as the main event, and it's made some of the pay per views be less glamorous. But in this case, they built out a really good card underneath, so that's exciting news to me, because I like kind of making an event of it, having a newborn. I kind of really have started to have to pick and choose and be very selective with the USC's I watch, just because I can't stay up that late anymore, and this is certainly one I'm not going to miss.
I like Mighty Mouse Johnson as much as the next guy, but it leaves you a little bit empty inside when you spend $55 to watch him. You know,
grind out basically get on his exercise bike for 25 minutes to a decision. Right. Yeah, just and running around there.
So Dos Anjos is going to fight, I can't pronounce his name, Nurmi, Khabib.
Right? Yes.
And Khabib beat him the first time they fought. So that's going to be... That's a tall order. That guy is a tall order for anyone in the division. I think he's a bad matchup for Cowboy, too, unfortunately, with his just his style, with that grinded-out wrestling style. That's Cowboy's been a little susceptible to that in the past. Right. So hopefully Dos Anjos wins, because I think him, a fight between him and Cerrone is guaranteed fireworks. It's gonna be,
yeah, I think that'd be great.
All right, last one on here. Chad has a newborn. We don't want to keep him too long. Last one on here. Andrei Arlovsky. This is the card of the reclamation projects. Andrei Arlovsky left for dead a long time ago. Oh, I mean, man. I remember watching him. I don't have his record in front of me, but it had to be in 2008 or so, getting just knocked out cold by Brett the Grim Rogers in Elite, whatever they were calling it at the time.
Yeah, Elite XC, yeah.
And, I mean, he was done. He seemed like he was done. And it's almost like the UFC brought him back as, you know, just a name, you know, maybe a retirement gift for him. And what's he done since he's been here?
Yeah, it's been very surprising, because I was like you, Roger. I mean, you know, watched him, well, I actually fell asleep watching him face Tim Sylvia.
We don't talk bad about the maniac on here. I'm the one Tim Sylvia fan in the whole world. So his quick tangent. If you remember their trilogy, right? So the first fight, Arlovsky beat Sylvia pretty easily. And then Arlovsky went on that run where he just looked unbeatable. And then Sylvia fought him again, thought, you know, no one gave Big Tim a chance, and I loved Tim Sylvia. I just loved everything about the guy. So I was in a room full of people really into it, you know, and Sylvia gets dropped early, like dropped bad early. Somehow gets to his feet, and Arlovsky walked into that left hand and knocked him cold. My head hit the ceiling, Chad. I was throwing the middle finger up to everybody who'd been making fun of me, who was a It's honestly one of my best MMA moments was Tim Sylvia knocking him out cold.
That was right around the time I got into UFC, because it was kind of in the wake of The Ultimate Fighter. And still, these were the guys that were kind of your centerpieces for the heavyweight. But yeah, so then, I mean, him in Affliction, him in Elite XC, toiled around in Strikeforce and all sorts of minor leagues. And yeah, now he's back and beat Bigfoot, beat Brendan Schaub, now has a fight against an interesting, kind of an interesting opponent in Brown, I would say, who's another guy similar to Belfort. I mean, you know, not sort of beat everybody he's supposed to be and had some impressive victories there with Overeem and Gabriel Gonzaga, who's kind of like a gatekeeper too, but lost to Bigfoot and lost to Fabricio Werdum, which is no shame in that, but we'll kind of see what he has against Arlovsky. It's a sort of tough fight for me to gauge, really, because I'd say Arlovsky is not on the top end of the scale of the people that that Brown's lost to, but he's also probably a little more skilled and dangerous than the people that Brown, most of the people Brown's defeated.
Yeah, so I'm going to disagree. I think it's a god-awful matchup for Arlovsky. Real bad. Real, real bad. So Brown, the one thing, you know, Brown has two things. Really good chin and big power.
Huge knockout ability.
That's how he beat Overeem. I mean, Overeem teed off on him until Overeem loses fights like this. But Overeem beat the shit out of him until Overeem just got tired from punching him in the face. And then Brown knocked him out. Real bad, real recipe for disaster against Arlovsky. Arlovsky, I can't imagine that his chin has improved. I mean, he's lost a lot of fights by knockout. I don't see any way.
He's had chin problems.
big time. Big, big, big time. I don't see any way that Brown doesn't knock him out. I mean, I don't think, especially, I mean, I don't think Arlovsky, he's not the killer he was either offensively. You know, he's a little more tactical. I know he knocked out Bigfoot, but Bigfoot's chin is worse than his. but he's a little more tactical. And, I mean, I would think, I mean, given that, given Brown's chin, I would think that Arlovsky's going to fight the fight sort of safety first and try to stick and move, but Brown's going to catch him eventually. I mean, and it's just one shot, and it's over. I'm telling you. I don't see any way that Arlovsky wins.
Yeah, so you think first round, or you think he may survive a round?
As soon as he hits him. Really, the first good shot that lands will do it. I'm gonna say first round, but it could be the second. But I'm gonna go with the first. I just don't see. I hate to say it too. I just don't see. I think Dana stuck it to him with this one.
So if Brown does win here, you think he'll face the winner of the Verdum fight coming up, or
I don't know. Do you think he's got? Do you have to put him in there with Junior?
Junior Dos Santos and see.
Junior Dos Santos, the Rich Franklin of the heavyweight division. He can beat everybody, but if he fights the champ, he's just going to get smoked.
Yeah, that's sort of where he's at. That wouldn't be a bad fight. I don't know how Brown. That would be interesting to see how they would match up.
Junior's got a good chin.
Junior does have a good chin.
So, I mean, I think if you put Brown in there with Cain Velasquez, he'll get completely slaughtered. I mean, he's tailor-made for him, you know. I mean, Velasquez is too good to get caught with something.
Yeah, Cain looks like somebody, too. That, I mean, he certainly has been able to have the stamina to keep up with that. And not
best cardio. Best cardio in the division. I don't think Verdum has a chance. I mean, no chance. But so that, you know, going back to that Tim Sylvia card, I'm not looking at it, but I remember it. I remember the other fights on the card. So it was Tito Ortiz's return to the UFC after he had had those contract issues with Dana White. He'd been gone for about a year and a half, and this is when he was still Tito Ortiz. And he fought Forrest Griffin in a fight that no one gave Griffin a chance, and Griffin... I mean, Tito won a razor-thin decision. Griffin beat him up in the third round. Really good fight. And then those were the two main events. And then the third fight wasn't Cowboy Cerrone. It was BJ Penn against George St. Pierre.
Jeez.
In the fight where BJ Penn drilled him early in the first round and looked like he was going to knock him out, and then St. Pierre won the second and third and won the decision.
Right. Nice. Yeah, I know. We've sort of touched on it a couple times, Roger, but this does feel like one of the more, I guess, stacked cards with guys that you can kind of look down, because even below that, I mean, you got your Joseph Benavidez.
And Moraga's a great
card.
Fight.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Dong-Yun Kim and Berkman's a really good fight.
Right. Benavidez is sort of the same situation as you was talking about with Rich Franklin and Junior Dos Santos. I mean, it seems like he could beat everybody at flyweight except for Mighty Mouse, and he had almost the same problem at bantamweight in WEC where he beat everybody except Dominique Cruz. So that's a good fight. John Dodson's been kind of flirting around in that division as well.
Big power on Dodson. It's fun to see a flyweight knockout artist. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not a lot of them. So very good, Chad. So, Sports Lounge listeners, my posse, you got the go-ahead here. If you were disappointed in Mayweather-Pacquiao, feel like you wasted $100 and you want to see some good action, some good UFC action, buy this card. For those in the area, I will have people over. You come with your... Just show up. And you tell me you listen to the Sports Lounge and come in for free. The wife's got some beers in the fridge ready for you. Got electric couches.
Can't ask for much more than that.
Exactly. I think Flanagan's going to be here. He gets. We don't want him to get out of hand. But so, Chad, thanks so much for coming on. Always great to have you on to talk mixed martial arts. And I can't wait for the card. Hopefully, you and I can communicate during the card.
Sure. Yeah, we'll be on our chat so we can talk through it.
All right. Very good. So, it's going to do it for this episode. We laughed, we cried, we cringed at the man love displayed during segment one with Senior and Tom Brady. We love you, Senior. You're biased, very biased, but we love you. So we'll be back next week. See how the fights went. See what else is coming up. So for Mr. Campbell, Chad, make yourself at home here. Go grab a drink over at the bar and whatever else you can find. And for Mr. Campbell, I'm the Cowboy. Until next time.
Well. Are you ready to lick the sexy? Take off your shoes and suck me sexy. That's right, girl. Let me whisper in your ear. Baby, wake up. We're naked and we're having sex for the last 15 minutes, baby. That's what's been happening. Yeah. Too late now. It's on. Baby, are you ready to lick me sexy? Take off your shoes and suck me sexy. Baby, we're naked and we're hungry sexy. Who wants to love me sexy? Is it you?